You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
Sarah, have you ever gone to like someplace out in public, like, say the post office, and you could just tell that things were getting crazy, like not because of the employees, but because of other people? Yeah. Witness people like just totally going, well, Pastor Richard has a great story for us. We're going to chat about his recent experience out in public and what he witnessed, and then some great insights on that as well. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University St. Paul. You can learn more about Concordia University St. Paul by visiting csp.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Matt Richard. He's pastor of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Minot, North Dakota, and here for a good theological chat about what we see going on in the world around us. I think I originally described this as the spiritual decline of America with the increase of paganism, I think was what I was thinking when I first started thinking about this conversation. But it started with a story you shared on social media, Pastor Richard. Welcome to The Coffee Hour. Looking forward to chatting today.
Yeah, it's good to be here.
So recently, you just made your usual trip to the local post office and witnessed something that maybe isn't that out of the ordinary, but at the same time is also kind of disturbing for us today. You want to share with us about this insightful visit?
Yeah, I'll try to be somewhat brief, and I'm not overindulging. You know, I maybe have the tendency of taking a fish story, right, and developing, see how that goes. Yeah, no, so I went to the post office the other day, and we had some trouble with our mail, and it just seems like lately when I go to the post office, you know, it just seems like it's contentious there. People are frustrated and so forth, and I came there, and they were short-staffed, as is pretty typical in most places these days, and a line of about 15 of us in line. And I'm just kind of standing there kind of waiting and listening to a podcast and so forth. And this individual's up the front line, and I noticed all of a sudden they're getting a little bit agitated. I noticed the body language, and I'm like, okay, this will be interesting. So I turned down my headset, just kind of listen, and a little bit more agitated. And then all of a sudden the voice gets raised. Okay, I'm like, this is fascinating. And then the vulgarity starts coming out. I'm like, all right, you know, we're amping it up. And then all of a sudden, the spit starts flying out of his mouth, and then his arms get really, really agitated. And I'm realizing, okay, we might have a situation here. And then I looked around, and I noticed everybody's head was down. And so this whole line of people, probably about 10 to 12, maybe 15 people, everybody's head was down. And I looked around, and there was an airman. So we have an Air Force base north of town, and his head was up and looking. And I looked at him, he kind of looked at me, and I looked back, and there was this gal, and her head was up. And I kind of looked at him, and I kind of did a little head nod. And we all kind of understood that, like, if something goes down, it's the three of us. And I realized, okay, it's three against one. He's a bigger guy, but I'm like, okay, we can take him. And then also, I'm like, here's my chance. I've been doing martial arts now for a year and a half. I can make my senseis proud. And I'm like, I can, but knowing my luck, I probably would have slipped and fell, and they would have taken care of him, you know? But anyway, so long story short, get to the point where I'm like, I'm going to have to step in and say something because it's just getting out of hand. And then he left and he slammed the glass door, and I thought it was going to shatter. He went out to the parking lot, got in his vehicle and revved up his engine and power braked and put the brakes on and then squealed his tires. Then he wasn't done. He put in reverse, came back again, gave the middle finger, started screaming. And we're all looking through the windows like a bunch of kids, like looking out of a school bus windows, like fascinated. And then he squeals the tires again and leaves. And there's this dead silence. And I couldn't help myself. So I said, well, wasn't that special? And everybody kind of had that nervous laugh. And then I said, well, you know, I think the three of us could have taken them, you know, and we're kind of laughing. And there's an airman there, obviously the military. And then the gal goes, well, she goes, I'm an undercover cop. And I said, no way. And I had my civilian clothes on. I said, no way, I'm an undercover pastor. And then everybody started laughing. And anyway, so it was this tense moment. Then when I left, I thought about it. I'm like, you know, every time I come to the post office, or it seems like lately I'm in the bank, or, you know, at the customer service at, you know, Walmart, it just seems that this attitude is just absolutely emerging where, you know, I thought maybe I'm just getting older, maybe more curmudgeon or something, but I'm like, no, I think this is the nature. But then it dawned on me, we're studying Habakkuk with our men and women's Bible study. And I'm like, this is the exact fruit of what you would expect of a pagan culture. And so I was sharing this with my church. I'm like, we shouldn't be surprised when we see this happen, because this is fitting to a T what we see in the Old Testament with such as the Babylonians and how they functioned and how their culture was and operated at the time. So there's really nothing new under the sun. So this should not surprise us anymore. And I hate to say that, but it really shouldn't.
Tell us more about what this experience explains, brings to light about where our culture is today.
Well, I think maybe just to kind of compare and contrast, we were going through the book of Habakkuk with our men's and women's Bible study, just going through it slowly and looking at the Babylonians. Now, the Babylonians, for the listeners, they were about 600 BC, and they came in and they exiled the Israelites out of Israel. And Habakkuk, the prophet, describes kind of the, how do we say this, the ethos, the way the culture functioned. And just very, very briefly, so during the time of the Babylonians, they're made a couple quick notes here. They had a corrupt justice system, and so judges were often bribed, okay? And so the powerful got favorable rulings. The law in the land was sluggish. It was paralyzed. It was numb. In fact, the difference between right and wrong was defined by power and pride. And so power and pride made what was right, right, and what was wrong, wrong. There was massive destruction and violence, murder, abuse. And so to get your way, you just had to be violent. And it was basically the powerful would rule. The wealth was built upon extortion. They created safety by dishonest gains. They built an empire by blood, and they manipulated others. And so to exist in that Babylonian empire, it was basically the weakest would what? Fall out of favor. So it was the rule of the powerful, the rule of the mighty, the rule of wealth. And so there's no compassion for the weak, no self-check of one's pride, no confrontation of our sinful old Adam. The sinful nature just ran rapid. And whoever had the most power, who had the most wealth, who had the most manipulation, they won the day. And so this culture of Babylon is what we see coming through the cracks. In my humble opinion, we see this coming through the cracks here in America, where the sinful nature is left unchecked. And we're being taught culturally that if you scream really loud and stomp your feet, or you dish out some cash, you can get your way. And tragically, seeing that more and more often the case.
Yes, there's this constant theme of I'm the victim, and just scream louder, I think is what you used in the writing that you shared on Facebook recently. That's kind of a common theme. Like, I'm always the victim, and therefore I just have to scream louder.
Yeah. Yeah. So in that mindset, the victim mentality can be, now we got to be very, very clear. There is such a thing as true victims. You know, mm-hmm. There are people who use their power to oppress and to inflict harm on individuals. They inflict harm on individuals. But we got to be very careful, though, too, at the same time, if we don't get our way, or if we're not happy, in other words, if we're not happy in every single moment, we're somehow not victimized. And then the result of if we are truly victimized, that does not give us a right to inflict wounds on other people. And that's probably the downfall. So this individual at the post office, he was, in his mind, he was being victimized by the bad post office. And therefore, he had every right of being just and fair to have his rant and rave and even get physically violent. Not only physically violent, but he was verbally just way over the top. But in his mind, he was completely justified in doing that to meet the justice of his victimization. And there was no self-examination, we'll say it that way. There was no self-check. And that is very, very, very difficult to have a culture that functions that way.
Is this kind of a snowballing phenomenon? People have always been sinful, right? But this maybe is something that's gotten worse in culture. Is that something that you've seen throughout the years?
Well, I think we have to be very clear that when it comes to our sinful nature that we all have, okay, so we're talking about the pagan and the Christian. We should very much include that the Christian has this sinful old Adam. And the sinful old Adam, if we give the old Adam, the sinful nature, what it wants, it is going to run over everyone. And so you think of a child. If you let the child, you give into their temper tantrum, the temper tantrum will kick and bite and scream. And in fact, you look at little children, the way they act. Unfortunately, we look at our culture, many times adults are acting the same way as children. And so what do we do with our children? We try to curb that, teach them to keep that sinful nature in check. And that's the goal, right, in all of us, as being citizens is that we keep our own sinful nature in check. We don't let it run rampant. But when you remove that curb stop of correcting the old Adam, and at least pushing back on it, and you allow the sinful nature to have full reign, then you develop into this Babylonian culture, this pagan culture. And so in my humble opinion, what we are seeing many times, maybe more often than not lately, is this inability to curb this sinful nature. Now, the sinful nature has always existed, but there was a time and a place, I think it was curbed more than it is now. And now the stops, maybe like bowling, right? So the bumpers, right? They've been removed. Whereas the bumpers, when they're up, it keeps the ball in the center. Whereas culturally, socially, some of these curbs, some of these gutter blockers or whatever you call them, are being removed. And now things are kind of getting outside of the lane, if you will.
Well, I think that what I see in common between what you were reading in the Minor Prophets and also what we're seeing in today's society is a lack of identifying objective truth or no recognition of objective truth. And so therefore there's no right or wrong if there's no objective truth. And I think that's certainly where we are today as a society. I want to talk more about what do we do with this then? What do we do with living in a pagan society? How do we as Christians respond faithfully in that? So we'll do that in just a moment as we continue our conversation with Pastor Matt Richard, pastor of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Minot, North Dakota. We'll continue the conversation in just a moment right here on the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth. Who am I? How has God gifted me? Where is God calling me to serve? Concordia University St. Paul helps students explore the answers to these questions. Through a Christ-centered Lutheran higher education, dedicated faculty, and engaging academic programs, CSP is here to walk alongside you in your educational journey. With more than 100 degree programs from undergraduate to graduate offered in person and online, CSP aims to prepare you for success however God calls you. Visit csp.edu to discover and engage your calling today.
Welcome back to the Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We're talking theological today, mm-hmm. A bit theology, and I don't know, there's another word for this type of conversation. Pastor Richard, how would you describe the conversation we're having today? How should I write this in the show notes today?
Yeah. I think this is just practical theology at work. Okay. Yeah, it's just taking like and understanding our theology that it's happening with flesh and blood, right? Right before us. We can analyze culture this way. Yeah.
So we've been talking about the increasing challenges we face living in an increasingly pagan society. Another topic you've written about, which is closely related to this, is how we look at this situation and we think, well, that's atheism. And how do we respond to atheism? Let's talk a little bit about that and what you've written about that.
Yeah. So I have said in the past, and I've actually had to correct myself here at St. Paul's when we've talked about this, I said that atheism is on a decline. And now what I've had to retract on that is early 1900s, atheism constituted about 1% of the population here in America. Now it's right around 4.5% of our population would consider itself atheistic. Now, I would say that atheism has increased, obviously from 1% to about 4-5%. It has increased, but I think its influence has drastically decreased. Now, let's just go back to the 1900s. We look back in the 1900s, the kind of the mantra was with communist Russia and so forth, being atheistic and so forth, that pressure was always between this, how do we say this, dichotomy, forgive me for all the big words here, but this tension between there is a God and then there is not a God. And we think of that Time magazine article, Is God Dead? That famous Time magazine article that came out in the 1900s. So the tension for the church has always been, you've got God on one side and you have atheism on the other. So in order to push back against that, we want to advocate for God, obviously. And so if somebody has a mug, let's just say coffee mug, and has the word God on it, we'd say, yay, they're on team God. And so that's great. And so the focus was not necessarily on the theology or the doctrine. It was just, if a person's advocating for God, God be praised, they're not an atheist, we're beating the atheists, and at least they have a God. Now, I would argue that that mantra, that understanding of culture has changed drastically. And other pastors and theologians have written on this called the nuns, the emerging of the nuns. Now, the nuns are not Catholic nuns, and to be very, very clear, these are the individuals in culture that are spiritual but not religious. Back in the early 1900s, this was unheard of. And then in the late 1900s, it expanded 12, 13, 14, 15%. And now we're at 33% of Americans consider themselves nuns. They're spiritual, but they're not religious. In other words, they don't necessarily ascribe themselves to any denomination. And they would not necessarily say that they're atheist, but they believe in spiritual things. And so they may actually believe in, well, Christianity, and they may also believe in a bunch of other things. Surprisingly, I had a conversation, I had to go back to the post office again. It was like a week later. And there's this really nice young man that was in there, and he had this tattoo of a church. And so I used it as an opportunity. I had my collar on at that time. I started talking to him, and he started sharing all this spirituality with me. And a lot of it was Christianity. Other was Gnosticism. I mean, it's a whole other topic. It was Gnostic. And then he had all this other spirituality, Eastern spirituality mixed into it. Now, if you take that young man and you go back to the 1900s, you would hear him and see a church on him. He was talking about God. You say, man, he's one of us. He's on our team. However, not realizing that this young man, now fast forward to right now, he was what we call syncretistic. Yes, he believed in God. Okay, that's nice. But he had actually blended Christianity with probably three or four other different spiritual trends and ideologies. And so if we were to bring him into, let's just say, membership at St. Paul's, we would have to go through extensive catechesis to strip away all this other baggage to just get back to Christianity. And so I think our threat right now is not necessarily does a person believe in God, because those nuns, 33%, will believe in a higher power of some sort or something spiritual. But the question is not do they believe in God, but what kind of God are they worshiping?
What do we do with that? How do we approach those kinds of relationships, conversations with people who, I mean, yeah, like what you said, like it's at least you believe in God. How do we approach that from a faithful perspective?
Well, I think back up a little bit on this to answer that question. I think we have to understand, and this is a little bit of a sobering moment for us as a church. We need to recognize on the one hand, yes, God be praised that they're acknowledging God, okay, that they're not atheistic. But we need to understand this is where doctrine comes into play. And so I'm thinking back to the Israelites in 2 Kings. It says they feared the Lord, but also, there's a but also served their own gods after the manner of the nations. So they were doing a smorgasbord, a double dipping. You know, they were two-timing, right? They had a little bit of Baal and a little bit of God at the same time, mixing them together. And so this is where a great deal of discernment is needed for the church right now. And so it's not just as easy as simply saying, oh, they're team God versus team no God, team atheist. We have to be more discerning as a church, which means we have to know our theology. We need to know what we believe and why we believe it. And a person that just says, yes, I believe in God. Okay, we have to ask, what do you mean by that? You know, what do you mean by that? And then flush that out, what they actually mean by that. And in order to do that, we have to know what we believe and why. And I would say that gets back to a diligent study of scriptures, a diligent study of our confessions, our catechisms, to be well-versed. But if we're not well-versed, we're not equipped to even have those conversations to begin with. So we have to be able to self-check ourselves and study hard as a church to know what we believe and why. Then that prepares us to actually begin to have those conversations, identify where the differences are. And then I would say that that realm is one of compassion and grace and loving them, but also speaking the truth, as Paul says, in love, being very clear with our confession without apologizing, but yet at the same time, not shoving it down, you know, shoving it down their throat per se.
Okay. You used the word syncretism earlier. Can we have a clear definition of syncretism that will help us? And then what do we do with that? You've done a nice job, I think, of explaining that, but let's sum it up with a definition.
Okay. So think of it's summer out and think of Dairy Queen blizzards, right? So if we think about, okay, what I was talking about before, if you have ice cream and Oreos, right? They're separate, right? Two categories. Back in the day, it was God or atheism. They're separate. So if you were to reject the ice cream, then you were definitely what, Camp Oreo, right? That would be called apostasy, right? So if you reject God, that's called apostasy. So you reject the ice cream and you just take the Oreos, right? It's either or, one or the other. But syncretism is taking the ice cream and the Oreos together, having a little bit of both, putting them in a blender, taking both. And so syncretism is blending aspects of different religions together. So you don't reject Christianity. So this young man at the post office, he was thrilled that I was a pastor. He thought my cross on my neck was great. You know, he was happy that I commented on his church tattoo. And we were like, what? We were like close, him and I, because we were what, both talking about spirituality. And so he did not reject Christianity. The problem is that he put a comma or he put parentheses and he added a bunch of other things to it. And so syncretism, I think, again, can be defined by that 2 Kings passage. So they feared the Lord, but also they what? Served the gods of the other nations. So they did both. They were double dipping. They were two timing, as it could be said. They had their cake and they ate it too, as they say. So that's so syncretism.
Let's be clear that why that's a problem, because I don't think that's clear in American culture today, even among like some American evangelicalism, why that's a problem. I can't have both the Christian God and all these other things. What, they're all good gods too. It's really all the same thing, right?
Like, yeah. So I think about what Jesus says and what Paul says, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And so you think of a little yeast, what it does, that it can come and can permeate the whole batch. And it can think of it ruining the whole batch. And so when a little bit of yeast, it actually, all you need is a pinch of yeast and it can permeate through the whole dough. And then it causes fermentation, the whole thing, and it spreads. And so this is the illustration that's used by Jesus and Paul as far as sin itself. And so we need to keep in mind that this pagan culture, and we were studying this morning with the men's and women's Bible study in the book of Micah, and was talking about this pagan, this idolatry, this paganism that was in Samaria, and how it moved and it spread like a poison. It came down to Jerusalem, at the gates of Jerusalem, and it infected that. So this pagan ideology is essentially demonic at its core, and you cannot mix light and dark. When you do that, you end up spoiling the gospel. The gospel is about Christ Jesus and Him alone. And so we as Christians, we hold to Christ alone, we hold to grace alone, we hold to the Word alone, and it's Jesus with a period. It is the Word of God with a period. It is God's grace with a period. But when we take that period and we make it into a comma, or we erase the period and we put a plus sign and we add a bunch of things onto it, we destroy the essence and the person of Christ. We destroy the essence of the gospel. We destroy Christianity. Jesus does not say, I am a way and a truth and a life. He says, with a definite article, I am the way, the truth, and the life. And so when you add to Jesus, you subtract Jesus, you destroy Jesus. When you add to Christianity, you destroy the message of Christianity. And so that is what's at stake here. And that's what was stake at the Old Testament. Every single time that the Israelites, they started taking on the pagan deities, they destroyed the gift of who God is. And He's a holy God, and He's set apart. He's a jealous God. And when you start introducing other deities, other ideologies, it poisons the whole batch.
What are some faithful ways to maybe identify when this is happening around us in our culture? Because as we're talking, like this kind of thing permeates a lot of different spaces in our culture and a lot of different things that we interact with. How can we identify it and speak faithfully about it in our circles, as you're saying, speaking the truth in love?
Yeah, I'm stealing this from this question, and I can't remember the individual. I think it was like a YouTube video I watched once upon a time. He says that when somebody says an assertion, you have to stop and say, what do you mean by that? Mm. And so we you know, there's going to be terminology that's going to be used by individuals, Jesus, grace, faith, you know, all of these spiritual terms that are out there. And with the advent and the use of social media and so forth, we have this terminology at a wide access across America. So when somebody makes an assertion, I think you can simply humbly and ask, say, what do you mean by that? You know, and that's not being confrontational. It's just, help me out. Hey, that sounds interesting. Tell me, what do you mean by that? And you'll notice right away then whether they actually know what they're talking about or if they're just repeating a talking point. If they're just repeating a talking point, I would say, you know, don't shred them. They're maybe just sharing it as a thought. But if they do know what they're talking about, maybe they'll expound on it. And you might realize that the words that they're using are different than the words that, same words that how we use them. And then perhaps you can say, well, that's amazing. Where did you learn that to be true? What's your source on that? How did you come to understand that? And more often than not, when I ask that question, a lot of times people say, well, I don't know. I just kind of, you know, picked it up here and there. And you just say, okay, that's cool. And that shows that they really haven't spent much time thinking about it, you know. But if you do push them on that, you might find out, well, I learned that from, you know, Eastern religion, you know, or I learned that from, you know, Lutheran church, or maybe learned that from, well, I saw it on a YouTube channel, you know. And so you can piece this together where they're getting their theology from. So everybody, you know, our theology, we're all theological. Everyone has, you know, this, and especially the nuns, they have this theological lens in which they view spirituality, they view themselves and so forth. But the question is, where are they getting it from and how are they using the terms and how are they applying it? And so I think as Christians, not that I think, I know we as Christians, we have a lot of work to do to ask people, what do you mean by that? How did you know that to be true? Where did you come to know that? And then gently, gently try to, well, can I offer you a couple of thoughts from my perspective and inject and share and proclaim the good news of the gospel to them?
The good news. Proclaim the good news. Our guest today, the Reverend Dr. Matt Richard, pastor of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Minot, North Dakota. Thanks for the good chat today.
Absolutely. It's always fun, you guys.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.